don't write theme tunes as wonderfully as that these days. Or maybe they do. The London Guitars and Ike Isaac with, of course, the theme to Bless This House, Bless My Soul. Sally Jesus back with us. Hello, Sally. How are you?
Hello, Alex. Lovely to hear you. And do you know that Jeff Love wrote that piece of music?
Oh, Manuel and the Music of the Mountains, as he often used to be referred to. Well, he wasn't being Jeff Love, of course. But yes, just shows the quality that works through that. Anyway, Sally, it's been ridiculous. I don't think we've actually spoken in 2016 as yet. So this has been ridiculous. You know, we've had far too many months without your dulcet tones across the airwaves.
I'm sorry, Alex. Well, I'm here now.
Quite rightly so, too. And it's just one exciting thing after another, because I don't know if you heard Gary Curtis, who was just beside himself with joy and happiness, the fact that obviously looking to hopefully work together. We've even thought about doing a location report and coming down and actually covering yourself and Gary and Nick Elliott and some of the rest of the guys there. So who knows, we might actually meet there. If we can't get you up to Lincoln, we'll come to the video filming.
Oh, how lovely. Well, I'm sure you'd enjoy it, because we had a fantastic time when we did the last one, which was, I think it was 2012.
Yeah, well.
If every day was like Christmas. And we actually filmed that at Pinewood Studios. I bet Gary told you all about it, did he?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. All saw through there. Gary, as I say, just wrapped up his third appearance with us. So he's relatively young in terms of midweek drive correspondence, as I say.
Aww.
But
he's
working through that whole process.
He's lovely, though, and he's such fun.
Well, Sally, you should know we only have lovely people on the production, because otherwise it's just not worth the hassle, really. That's the bottom line. It's just carry on through. That's the bottom line. Moving on to the Carry On movies. And I'm going to give you a choice here in terms of musical selections to actually just take us around this. We can offer you the theme to either Carry On Abroad or Carry On Girls. Which one would you like to go for?
Oh, I think definitely Carry On Abroad.
You get Carry On. That's interesting, because that went down very well with our Jersey correspondent, Anne Lewis, earlier in the production. And I think clearly it's going to be the magical thing that just gives us a little flavour, courtesy of Gavin Sutherland, of the magical Carry On scenario.
Okay.
As I said, what better thing could you actually have to celebrate the joys of the Carry On movies, the glamour, the double entendres, the saucy seaside postcard humour, and Sally Jeeson?
Oh, Alex.
Academy Award winning.
That certainly brings back memories, that music. Gosh.
Well, we figured it was time to actually just sort of play a little round with the musical soundtracks. And somebody who would know all about that, of course, is historian, author and broadcaster Robert Ross.
Yes, Robert. Well, I'm glad you've mentioned Rob, because he's a friend of mine, and he is indeed a very well-known now British comedy historian, and he has been appointed the advisor for the new Carry On movie.
Which is sensational, because as we said, the 21st century is continuing and will be carrying on. So great news. As I said, Sal, at the end of the day, you need to take over the June one of the main characters, etc. We need Sally Jesson in the next Carry On.
Well, you know, I think that's a very good idea. I think that the new Carry On movie is going to be fabulous. A lot of people were very sceptical at first, and they thought, well, how can you replace these wonderful characters like Kenneth Williams? But I don't think that's what they're intending to do. I think they want to bring in new characters, new people, young actors, and that would be fantastic. If they can have some of the older people coming in as well, I think that would be very warming, and I think the public would like that.
Exactly, it's essential.
Yeah.
So, as we said, the campaign starts now. You mentioned, obviously,
campaign.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll start it rolling. You know, it's all right having general elections and European referendums and presidential elections, etc. But fundamentally, the public need to get behind Sally Jesson in the next Carry On movie.
Oh, Alex. Well, you know, I played Lily in Carry On Abroad, and Carol Hawkins played Marge. And I can just imagine Marge and I appearing and doing a little cameo, can't you?
Precisely.
Sort of, I think it's called Carry On Doctors.
It would clearly be a case of the balance between the Fenn Street Gang, Bless This House, into Carry On. What's not to love?
And I think we'd sort of come into A&E, me and Carol, you know, saying, "Oh, yeah, we're still here, arm in arm."
Yeah. You could actually be the medical supervisors. You could actually never know.
It would be great fun. But I'm really pleased for Robert. You know, he's a great guy. Actually, I'd like to tell you how I first met him. May I?
Of course.
Well, we were reminiscing just today, actually, and he was about 11 or 12 years old, and he wrote me a fan letter. And he said, "Oh, hello, my name's Robert, and I really like you, and I really like Sid James. I'm a really big fan of his. And one day I'd like to be a writer." And I kept this letter, and I suppose about 20 years ago, maybe a little less, we finally met in London, and he was writing a book about Sid. And he's since written lots of books. He's like a walking encyclopedia of British comedy, actually. He's amazing. So I'm really pleased that he's got this job. I think it's well-deserved.
And more wonderful than that, actually, Robert's also received the Sally Geeson Seal of Approval to possibly join us on one of these radio programmes in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, I think that would be marvellous. He's so interesting. And, there's nothing he doesn't know. He knows more about my career than I do, I think.
Can be a bit scary, I suppose. But at the end of the day, it's good research. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Midweek drive-outs, as we said, are pretty much on holiday this week. So I think they're just sort of chilling out. They're probably carrying on abroad. Who knows? But from your own perspective, in terms of how things are actually going, that carry-on scenario... Between Bless This House and the Carry On scenario, I mean, two really iconic series there that you've been involved with. And, of course, there is a Bless This House movie as well.
Yes, there is, yeah. And, it's all been recorded very well, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful way. Did you have a preference, if I was actually to sort of say, are you more of a Bless This House person, or did you prefer the Carry On? Or?
Well, I think probably Bless This House, Alex, because I worked on it for so long. It was between 6 and 7 years. That was a long time. The Carry On films are made in about 6 weeks, so that's a big difference. But I still had a great time. I mean, it was fantastic fun, happy days, and those wonderful people. Charles Hawtrey was always my favourite.
Really?
Yes. When Judy and I, my sister and I, were children, we used to watch the Carry Ons. We loved Carry On Nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And we found Charles Hawtrey hysterical. And when I eventually appeared in a carry-on film, my mum was over the moon. She said, "Oh, that's fantastic, Sal." And I was excited because although I was making lots of other programs and doing things, there I was with all these amazing people, including Charles Hawtrey, who made me laugh so much.
I think it's the iconographical nature of the whole system, and also something which is almost quintessentially British. I mean, we talked about saucy seaside humour, quite a tongue-twister to say it is best of times, but there is that sort of sense that we still need to have that notion of poking fun at sort of issues, poking fun in a harmless way without necessarily being aggressive with it, shall we say.
No, and I think they'll probably capture that. In fact, I'm sure they will. Although there were an awful lot of innuendos in the old Carry On films, weren't there? I don't know if they can use those quite the same way. They got away with them, didn't they?
Well, cultures change. I mean, there are certain programmes that will work and others that need to be, shall we say, refocused for the 21st century period, unless, of course, you want to create a riot, which we don't want to do.
No.
It's a sensitivity. Do you ever feel that you wanted to actually write for yourself in terms of the characters that were there, Sally? I mean, in terms of creating what happened next to the daughter in Bless This House and so on.
Yes, you do think those sort of things. You do. Of course, it all came to such a sad end, didn't it, Alex, when Sid died, so it couldn't go on. But I used to come home, yes, and I suppose in my dreams I used to think, I wonder what Sally would have done. I wonder where she would have gone. She's probably got married, wouldn't she? Little Sally Abbott, had children and been a nice girl. Just like me.
Precisely. It just sort of it echoes in every sense of the word. Of course, the campaign, as well as getting into the carry-on movie, is when are we going to see Sally Geeson in Lincoln? We need to get you up into the air.
Oh, I'd love to. Well, do you know what? I'm coming up to Darlington later this year.
Oh, well.
Where's Darlington? Is that near you?
Darlington is very near one of our northern studios in Teesside, but it's you kind of overshoot Lincoln by, let me see, about 120 miles.
Oh, that's a shame. Because they're actually showing Carry On Abroad, and then I'm doing a Q&A after it.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think we could be able to. Would that be at the? It would be at the Darlington Civic Theatre, because that's actually going dark for 18 months until it gets completely refurbished and revamped as a new Darlington Hippodrome.
Yes, I used to work at the Darlington Civic Theatre.
Yeah, well, it's finally actually sort of the curtain has actually gone down for just 18 months, and then it might be 17 months actually, but they're going to be completely revamping it, and I think it's going to be relaunched as the Darlington Hippodrome as opposed to the Darlington Civic.
Right. Well, no, this is not the Civic Theatre. It's somewhere else. I don't have all the details yet. It's a little bit in advance.
We will find out and discuss that. I'm sure we get something sorted out from that point.
Yes, and I'm doing another one in Maidenhead in July.
Well, it's just a win-win situation, as we say. Perfect, in every sense of the word. Sally, in a few moments, we're going to be speaking to Academy Award-winning special effects specialist Brian Johnson. I'm obviously known for Alien, for 2001 A Space Odyssey, Empire Strikes Back, Space 1999 and others. Were there many special effects in Bless This House? I mean, obviously there were sort of various slapstick effects in the Carry On series. Did Bless This House have any special effects that were there?
I don't know if it did, actually. No. I don't think it did. I honestly can't.
That's the theme. No. What would happen?
We'll have to ask Robert Ross.
Clearly, yeah. What would have happened to the Abbott family if aliens had invaded from outer space?
Yeah. That would have been good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's a mashup. Or if they'd actually gone through the looking glass in the whole sort of system and gone into a completely parallel dimension.
Now, my friend Alan Tomkins, art director, was the art director on 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Well, you see, it's just clearly destiny is bringing us to the monolith in every sense of the word.
Alan Tomkins?
I know of him, but we have actually met. So again, I can see a whole range of Sally Geeson recommendations here, keeping the flag flying, really.
Well, he's very interesting too.
Sally, it's been fantastic just shooting the proverbial metaphysical breeze as we approach 10 minutes past 6 o'clock in Lincoln, England, just before we actually go over to Los Angeles to speak to Phil Leonis, who'll be reflecting on life, the universe, and his recent trip across the United States with Lily Holliman. He's done the Route 66 tour as well. It's great stuff. His latest movie, The Lady Killers, not to be confused with The Lady Killers, of course, the Alec Guinness number, is going to be released hopefully later on in 2016, all being well. Brian Johnson's coming up next from the aforementioned series of events, etc., and SF scenarios, extraordinary. But for the moment, Sally Geeson, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, Alex, I've had, as always, a great time. Thank you.
It's been a joy and a delight almost unparalleled to feature you again. So Sally, I take it won't be too long before you're back with us telephonically and keeping us appraised of life, the universe and other things in the Geeson experience.
Okay, thanks Sally.
Hey. when you've got over 40 years experience as a special and visual effects designer and you have credits like 2001 A Space Odyssey, Alien, Empire Strikes Back, and Space 99 to your credit, well, you deserve the right to be referred to as a legend. And we're delighted to welcome live to the show for the first time, as far as a telephonic correspondent is concerned, gentleman we first met up with, of course, at Sci-Fi Scarborough, the fantastically talented Brian Johnson. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Hello, Alex. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
More than that. Thriving on the whole thing. Now, a little sequence there from a series I'm not sure whether you worked on, actually. It was the theme, of course, from UFO by Barry Gray. Did you work on UFO, or did you move straight to Space 1999?
I had left and gone on to 2001.
Yes.
And then I didn't get back to Jerry again until...
Space 1999.
73. Well, no, just before that, I did The Protectors.
Oh, good heavens.
With Nairi Dawn Porter.
Tony Ann Holt and Robert Vaughan.
And Robert Vaughan, yes. And they got tape measures out and measured the sizes of their rooms to make sure they weren't being cheated.
Now, you mentioned this, Brian, and I had heard it from the late, great Gerry Anderson himself. And I must admit, I was a little bit sceptical then, because, you know, Robert Vaughan, to some of us, he is always going to be Napoleon Solo. Some people might say he's the man in the Magnificent Seven. Other people might say he's the chap in Hustle. But so to be Harry Rule, which of course was his character in The Protectors, and coupled, of course, with Contessa Di Cantini, with Nairi Dawn Porter, and Paul Boucher, played by Tony Ann Holt, you would have thought, but measuring the size of their rooms, that's... Okay.
Oh, well, there you go. That's ego for you.
In the avenues and alleyways where the souls of men are easy to hide. And we once did a feature with Mitch Hollander, I think, or Mitch, the chap who actually wrote Avenues and Alleyways. Sorry, I'm reflecting and reminiscing there, Brian.
Okay.
Moving on, what was it about the special effects industry that effectively said, yeah, this is what I really want to go in for? Because, I mean, looking at some of the iconographic models that you've produced, and clearly the Eagle from Space 1999 springs to mind, what was it that sort of said, you know, was it something you always liked working with? Was it an ethics fixation you actually had as a child? You know, what brought you into special and visual effects?
What brought me in was the Second World War. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up, I was born just before the Second World War, and my childhood was memories of aircraft flashing over the top of the house and stuff like that going on. I lived in Sunbury-on-Thames, and it was close to a couple of airfields. Mm. So it was pretty exciting for a young chap and his pals.
Absolutely. I mean, we're doing a feature recently with the late Arthur C. Clarke and his opening sequence to Childhood's End, which he claims was actually inspired by the views of barrage balloons across London and the sort of silvery spaceships that you actually saw there, which hopefully we'll never return back to. But
we had a V1 bomb hit the chestnut tree in our garden and bounce down the road and blow up. So we got fairly close to it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. As we mentioned, clearly in terms of the history of your good self, you worked with the our wonderful Les Bowie, the special effects artist, etc.
He was my mentor, absolutely my mentor, yep.
And some of those films, On the Buses, of course, Hammer. We're thinking about that, a bit like The Protectors. We don't quite anticipate On the Buses actually sort of requiring a special effects scenario, but yes, they do, of course. In terms of On the Buses, we don't necessarily think that they would need a special effects scenario, because you don't think On the Buses, surely it's not a special effects laden series, but you know they do as part of the magic of the series. Are you still there, Brian? Hello?
No, I'm back. I'm back
sorry.
Again.
That's all right. Yes. No, I was just interested in terms of how On the Buses, you know, a situation comedy, one doesn't necessarily think needs a special effects artist.
I didn't hear any of that, but Les Bowie was my mentor and about 30 other effects people in the British film industry, including...
Oh, Lord. You see, this is where we obviously need to sort out another special effects. Worry not, we will try and make another contact with Brian Johnson in a few moments from now. But we were talking about Space 1999. I think it's actually only right that we actually have a little reprise of the series.
Thank you.
honestly, we need to obviously get Brains and Hiram Hackenbacker on the case. Listening to The Breakaway, introduction from Space 1999, and Brian Johnson, you're back with us.
All right, it's not Brian Johnson, it's Ed Fortune. Hello.
Oh, no, good. You know, this is extraordinary. You're quite well done, Ed. We will say farewell to you once again. We will get back to Brian Johnson. Ever have one of those days where you think it's quite extraordinary here? Numbers go deliriously crazy. Ed, we salute you, and we'll speak again soon, no doubt.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
And the adventure continues. Okay, Space 1999 explores its particular life and times. Let's continue the search for Brian Johnson, lost somewhere in space, and clearly not Ed Fortune, after this. They may say it's lightning strikes, it may well be nuclear bombs taking out the moon into a different orbit of the Earth. Of course, Space 1999's theme there. Brian Johnson, hopefully you're back with us and the nuclear power plants haven't exploded.
Hello, Alex. Yeah, I'm fine. And as long as the wind farms stop producing any electricity, we'll be fine.
Clearly, big sighs of relief there, because we actually sort of went all over the sort of country, even ending up in Manchester for a time. You don't want to know, Brian. It was almost like
Paul Miller on radio, started. He has the same problem with this interview. So I wonder, do you have the same sort of equipment, unreliable equipment for the telephone calls?
Well, mind. We'll breathe and continue to progress accordingly. If we can make it across to Nashville and Los Angeles, we can keep it going in this country.
Terrific. Okay, I'm ready.
So moving on, we were just hearing a little clip there from Space 1999, and we were talking about your experience with Les Bowie, and I was just fascinated by the fact you'd worked on the Buses, you'd worked on a range of Hammer films and so on. It really, is it a case of, do you seek out the movies? Are there movies which you think, yes, that's the one I'd like to work with in, etc.? Or do people realise we want the legendary Brian Johnson on our team?
Oh, God. Let's get something straight here. I'm just an effects man. The legend thing seems to have happened after I basically gave up doing effects work. But there you go. So what you do is you work and you pay, you earn money to pay for your kids' school fees or whatever. Mm. And you take whatever comes along. I said yes to Jerry for the second series of Space 1999 when I already knew that I was going to be doing Empire Strikes Back, because George Lucas and Gary Kurtz had come to the studio and offered me the job. Mm. and actually on Star Wars, but I couldn't do it because I'd said yes to Jerry 2 days beforehand. You have to do what you do, and I did the second series of Space, and then I did Empire Strikes Back later on.
And as I go on to look at the CV, it moves from The Empire Strikes Back, Dragon Slayer, of course, The Pirates of Penzance, The Never-Ending Story, Spies Like Us, Aliens, Slipstream with Bob Peck, of course, and indeed Mark Hamill, Space Truckers with our very own Shane Rimmer, who sends his best, by the way, Brian. He was very pleased.
Yeah, we meet each other on occasions at these signings and things like that. Yeah.
No, both Shane and Sheila, who were on the programme a couple of weeks ago, were very pleased. They said, do give Brian our very best. All great stuff on that.
Good.
These days, of course, Brian, you're also developing your own directorial skills as well, because you're producing your own wonderful productions, are you not?
Well, not really, no. I'm working for Nigel Stone of Platinum Pictures at Pinewood, and I directed 52 episodes of Dream Street for the BBC, all back in the 1999-2000 time. And we're going to do 65 more, I think, starting fairly soon. Mm. I'm not a producer. Nigel's a producer.
And in terms of the concept, Dream Street, would you like to just share with us what's the...
Okay, it's a little 9-10 minute kids program with these radio controlled cars and a jackhammer and various other things and traffic lights that talk and point and do various things. It's just a little show for kids, for sort of 3 to 5 year olds. Six-year-olds.
Let's move back to a kind of connection with Shane Rimmer and certainly our other director from Los Angeles, Phil Leonis, i.e. Stanley Kubrick, because not only did you work on 2001 A Space Odyssey, but I see you're also, yep, Dan, as having worked on the 1971 Clockwork Orange.
I did, yeah. Yep.
How was the experience of working with Kubrick?
Oh, he was fascinating. Yeah, I really liked him. He was a strange man. He was pretty cruel with his artists. He could make artists cry, but with technicians, he seemed pretty good. And I worked with Doug Trumbull and Con Pedersen on 2001, and I worked on it for three years and 4 months.
Mm. I mean, certainly the craft that went into both of those productions. Jamie Anderson, of course, a keeper of his late father Jerry's flame,
right.
Very keen to kind of maintain that tangible sense of what you get, and I presume, yep, that you're still keen to actually saying ultimately it's all very well the things you can do with a computer, with CGI and so on, but fundamentally there's something magical about having that solid model that you've created that sort of we see demonstrated.
I think a solid model plus computer graphics is the way to go, because what solid model plus CGI allows you to do is have rigs on the craft that you can get rid of with CGI. Before, we used to have to hang things on wires and stuff like that, you know, and it was a real pain. So I'm not opposed to CGI at all. I think in its place, it's great. What I don't like are directors who use it like it's the last thing since sliced bread, and they have the cameras moving in so many different directions so quickly that your brain knows that it's not real. And I don't understand why they have all that technology and they spoil it by putting in shots that you know are impossible. Like cameras going through the middle of astronauts and things like that, you know. Crazy.
Something which I think is common throughout all of your work, Brian, and it's certainly very clear, is that there's a quality to the finished product, which you don't occasionally. Sometimes you do get motion pictures, TV series, we won't mention any names, but they look a little bit ropey. They look as though they haven't quite given it the sense of care that you've actually produced. Was it something that you obviously had a sense of professional pride that ultimately you wanted that realism?
No, it's my crew. The crews that I pick to do the jobs are really good people, and they are the ones that produce what you see on the screen. And I stand back and take all the credit, but they're the ones that do all the hard work.
You see, you're just a wonderful sort of team manager extraordinaire. You know, credit to the troops.
Picking the right crew is the key to success on a movie. Mm. And I didn't always have the same people. You know, it varied on what sort of picture it was.
We met, of course, at Sci-Fi Scarborough. I need to ask you the classic line. How did you find the whole event? Was it enjoyable for 2 days?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. My son Guy was with me, and we had a really great time. And the amount of effort that the families put into those costumes that they wear was just staggering. I mean, I was really blown over by it all. Yeah, fantastic.
It just shows the inspiration that's actually there. And,
the fish and chips. And the fish and chips. I don't have fish and chips down here in south of London now. I only go up north to have my fish and chips.
Well, there we are, a Brian Johnson exclusive, which is fantastic. And as we look at the current scene, have you got any words of advice that you might like to give to anybody who might sort of be sort of saying, how can I be as have a career that's a tenth as wonderful as Brian Johnson?
Right. I started off sweeping the floor and then learning to put film into camera magazines and things. And I had one O-level, and I was an absolute dummy. Now, kids today need to have stuff behind them. They need to have not necessarily letters after their name, but they need to have a good education, and they need to be able to pick up a job that has nothing to do with special effects, so that if things go wrong, they can always go away and do something else and then come back to it.
Very sensible and very sage words of advice there, Brian. We're looking forward to obviously seeing the next series of Dream Street producing. But again, there's so much, you know, I'd love to sort of share and discuss. Time as ever is working through us. And we had a little bit
I'll just say one thing, if
course,
I may.
Of course.
I'm designing a whole series of new Eagle-like spacecraft. They're not for any particular thing, but somebody's asked me to design a set of spacecraft based on the Eagle. So I'm doing that now. Which is fun.
Absolutely. This is wonderful. And are there any further appearances that you'll be providing in terms of conventions and such like in the next few months?
I'm in Small Space, which is, I think, in July the 3rd, which is Matt Irvin, Matt's thing in Milton Keynes. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing one in Shropshire in August, I think it is, and I'm doing another one in September, and yeah, I'm doing one or two things.
Splendid. Brian, it's been absolutely wonderful connecting with your good self today. Genuinely mean that. It's
okay.
really tremendous.
My pleasure.
Well, I was a little bit worried halfway through when the lightning struck,
yeah,
and we thought, what was going on here?
Oh,
we
right.
ended up all over the place. Thankfully, all went well with the world. So International Rescue worked, and indeed, certainly as far as Space 1999 is concerned, the moon is still in its orbit. So,
oh, yeah, that's a terrible thing, isn't it? Why did they do that? I can't, you know.
Well,
it's such an impossible situation, but there we go.
That's life. Yes, exactly. And those Alphans, they're still going through the cosmos.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably Martin.
And Martin Landau's always going right to left because he wouldn't have the other side of his face photographed, so I knew which way the Eagles were going when they were flying.
Again, on the plus side, did Martin Landau or Barbara Bain actually measure their dressing room? Did they actually get the tape measure out?
I don't think so.
No,
they weren't like that. They were husband and wife.
Yeah, exactly. So they had a joint scenario. I must sort of share that with some of our colleagues around the base, etc. So just
and of course Nick Tate and yes, Catherine Schell and Xenia and a crowd of people. They were great.
Absolutely. In fact, Catherine Schell once did a show with me down in London back in the mid 80s, actually.
Did she?
Yes, the whole connection with that. And Fred Freiberger, another sort of folk who, of course.
Oh,
yes.
Fred.
I know. He sends shivers down, even Arthur Weingarten over in the States, when we mentioned Fred Freiberger. It wasn't his fault that every time he got hold of his show, he seemed to be the end of the season. And, of course, who could forget The Rules of Luton as an episode?
Jerry asked Gene Roddenberry who he should hire as a scriptwriter, and Roddenberry just fired Freddie Freiberger.
Yeah.
He mentioned his name for Jerry.
Sometimes you wonder whether that special relationship was as important as still. We can still smile about it. Brian,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future and featuring you again very soon?
No problem.
Brian,
yeah,
absolutely
sure.
Fantastic. We're going to go live over to America once again now. Do you remember a series called Route 66, by the way?
Oh, yes, do I ever. Martin, Route 66. Yeah, Martin, I can't think of his other name.
Balsam. You're quite right, yes, Route 66. Anyway, it's the theme which will take us over to Phil Dinas. Brian Johnson, we salute
Fantastic.
You.
Fantastic.
Take care now.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
AM in LA can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Leonis, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
October the 7th, 1960 to March the 20th, 1964, an American television drama that ran for a total of 116 episodes with, of course, Glenn Corbett in the final season, George Maharis and Martin Milner, as I remember that. And taking us neatly round to the aforementioned Phil Leonis. How are you, Phil?
Do you know, in being introduced with the word perspicacity allows me to segue into a tribute to the late Muhammad Ali.
There we are.
Who died this past week. One of my favorite clips ever was when a young Cassius Clay was being interviewed by Howard Cosell in what would become one of the most famous and contentious friendships in the media's history. And Howard Cosell referred to young Cassius Clay as being quite perspicacious. And Cassius Clay's response was, "I don't know what that means, but if it's good, I'm it."
So how was the LA Breakfast Club this morning then, Phil?
Terrific. And Alex, you know, it was wonderful to be back enjoying the rituals of it, especially after traveling across the country and meeting a woman who had recently spoken at something called the Houston Breakfast Club that was, in no small part, inspired by the legendary broadcasts of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club. But let me ask you this, Alex. When you call me spot on at 10:30 Los Angeles time here in the morning, I can only think two things. One, you're really intrigued to get into the nitty-gritty details of my travel diary.
Of course.
Or two, somebody canceled.
No.
Which is it?
Phil, just because William Coles is on a train somewhere down to London from Edinburgh is, by the by, you may have gathered, if you caught the information piece we did with Brian Johnson, that he was having lightning strikes in his particular part of the country. Hopefully you got the name checks for his work on both 2001 A Space Odyssey and indeed the wonderful stuff on another one of your favourite movies, I believe, Clockwork Orange.
Absolutely. I tuned in just at the beginning of his, had returned from the Breakfast Club just at the beginning of his interview, and I actually found myself responding to things he was saying out loud. You know, his story of how he became inspired to go into visual effects is sort of my favorite answer I've ever heard anyone give to that question, you know, about the air raids and the... all that he witnessed. I mean, that is, it's hard not to think that what would the word be? Not paranoia, but that kind of constant level of stress people lived under really served him well in creating effects for some of these films, especially the Kubrick films, right? Because, I mean, there is this constant sense of disquiet and stress just beneath the surface, even in the funniest of moments.
Although, as we said, and will continue to say with respect to William Sitwell, whose latest book, Eggs or Anarchy, is now available online, just because people had a healthier standard of eating and they were generally healthier in the Second World War doesn't mean we should have a global conflagration just to actually improve our dietary standards. It's a certain don't throw the baby out with the bathwater scenario. That's our little view on the sort of perspective of life, and perspicacious or otherwise. Moving on.
Does anyone throw the bathwater out anymore? I mean, don't you just pull the plug on it? I mean...
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I'm sure there'll be parts of the planet where throwing the baby out with the bathwater will still potentially be something which resonates, but hopefully, again, not in a frequently sort of line of things.
Right.
So
in the reach of your global audience, then yes, that's true.
Well, but, as I say, it's always critical. In case people are wondering, yes, of course, Phil Lehner's Los Angeles link long before Andrew David did his wonderful epic-making scenario last night, with indeed the Skype scenario working, which we will try and pilot with Phil, but probably not today. You can, of course, go online and check out the start of a series of Siren broadcasts on the United States presidential election, which is available for download now. Almost as exciting as the latest episode of the ChillPackHollywood.com hour. On this particular program, of course, Cameron Tilbury celebrated the fact that he was able to be your chauffeur when you were in Nashville. And as he said in his own unique Tilbury-esque way, "Just anything you want to shoot, just let me know and we'll stop and draw up with." So it was nice to see that bonding across Canada, Nashville and Los Angeles was successful, as indeed you alluded to last week. And we had to mention that, you know, clearly in terms of Cameron's experience, meeting yourself, Phil, certainly infinitely more productive than meeting Kiefer Sutherland. Only kidding. Kiefer's a wonderful
chap. Why did that not go well for him? Did the Kiefer meeting not go well?
It did. It went very well, actually. I'm just ribbing folk here. Just marvelous stuff. Anna Lewis, of course, did her Jersey Reflections. Gary Curtis was talking about his latest tune, Why. And Ed Fortune was on twice, unexpectedly, because, as you will have gathered during the Brian Johnston interview, heaven only knows what was happening with respect to phone lines, but in the end, we ended up dialing up somebody who'd already been on the show a few moments ago. It's ridiculous. Thanks to Sally Geeson, of course, for wonderful stuff as well. But Phil, now that you're back in Los Angeles, is it as though you've never been away, or are you celebrating the fact that Hillary Clinton's got the vote, or do you just say, no, I just don't want to do politics, just step away from that? Or alternatively, has Lily actually got to the stage now where she's measuring up the dressing room she's given just to sort of confirm she's got the right size of dressing room as Robert Vaughan, Tony Ann Holt and Nari Dion Porter did with The Protectors?
Boy, there were so many questions in there, half of which I didn't understand. It is not easy being in Los Angeles. It had been a long time since I had undergone such a rigorous road trip before, probably since Dean and I were making The Truth Is Out There, certainly since we were promoting it. And I forgot that you really do, it gets under your skin. Being on the road really gets under your skin. And even when you're aware that it's difficult, it's very enlivening knowing how many miles you got to make and when you've got to be somewhere and how can you fit in all the unexpected explorations that you encounter upon the way. It's a very way to live. And you try to get as much done in the early mornings and late at night at your destination, your temporary destination, as you can. But there's only so much you can do because you're so exhausted and so drained. So coming back to Los Angeles, there's an unbelievable to-do list to hit the ground running, as it were. But there's part of me that just wants to get right back on the road. And I remember this from when I was shooting, not only shooting and promoting Truth Is Out There, but even before that, Karl Rove, I Love You, was 3 years on the road. And I would only come back to Los Angeles for a few days and then be immediately ready to go on the road again. I kind of like that sort of experience. And also the fact that exploring the Southwest and the South, for the most part, eschewing major urban centers. Obviously, Nashville is a major city. Dallas are major cities. But Nashville was so interesting because it's founded on such different industries in some ways, while at the same time having the similarity of show business. But the urbanization of Los Angeles is a little bit of a shock, of a whiplash to come back to after touring so much of what derisively gets referred to as flyover country, but really is best appreciated as drive-through country because its gems are sadly untold and also innumerable.
And on the plus factor, of course, you've had a couple of special guests on Chilpack Hollywood, including Charles A. Coulomb. Not related to the electrical scientist who came up with the coulomb, the measure of current and electricity. Although I suppose he could have been, actually, Charles A. Coulomb. From...
Maybe. Who knows? Maybe.
It's worthwhile point. Apparently he was deeply unimpressed with your citations of the new reworking of Battlestar Galactica. But never mind. It's okay. Listen, it's Chilpack Hollywood Hour, episode 472. Just one after 471. And indeed the one before this week's 473. Splendid.
It's nice how we decided to slot that in there, 472, between 471 and 473.
It was almost as though...
Other shows might keep you waiting for 472, but we decided not to. We decided, no, conveniently, let's put them between 471 and 473.
Destiny clearly was addressing that particular aspect perfectly. I feel as though we're getting very surreal here. This is what happens when the Madrid Drivettes obviously go off on vacation and you sort of think, let's just shoot the breeze on the horse or system. Let's get back to the
Do
script.
You know, though, I received a lovely message from one of the Drivettes. One Emma Louise Tinson. Do you remember Emma Louise Tinson?
Emma Louise Tinson. Oh, yes, I do. Of course, yes, absolutely.
She wrote to me the following. This was a long time coming, if I'm not mistaken, Alex. Hi, Phil. How are you? I forgot to tell you that I finally got round to watching The Truth Is Out There.
This is true, yes.
I thought it was such an interesting topic for a documentary and was very thought-provoking. So great job.
And that's why we haven't deleted...
This is Rachel Abbott, and when I'm not producing all manner of audio goodness for On Broadcast, I always like to check out the latest news and views of Emma Tinson, Jessica Ward, and other Midweek Drivettes on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM.
See, we could have edited her out there, but we didn't, because she still remains part of the family. Anyway, so you see, it only took a little over 18 and a half months to watch it, which probably brings the maxim, sometimes with a fiddliness movie, you need to savour it, you know, second by second, just build up and build up to a time when you can actually sort of appreciate the whole experience.
It is refreshing, because usually, you know, people watch, dissect, and instantly critique and review a film.
As you did with Dawn of Justice.
In less than the running time of the film itself. So I appreciate that she took almost as long to watch the film as I took to make the film. Mm-hmm. But I was talking about movies. You can't call Dawn of Justice a movie.
Okay.
So, anywho, we had at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club today two outstanding speakers from your fair shores.
Good heavens.
Alex?
British people in Los Angeles. Good heavens.
Speaking about the history of the Los Angeles Central Library, one of whom is an Oscar-winning documentarian, Arnold Schwarzman, and he's written many books on architecture, and specifically architecture of historic buildings here in Los Angeles, Griffith Observatory being one, and now the Los Angeles Central Public Library, which is an extraordinary edifice, but also its story is something straight out of a, you know, Chinatown or some pulp noir movie. I mean, there is so much, you know, political infighting and intrigue, and there's fires destroying plans, and so it was a fascinating event, but again, told to us by two expats, I guess you could say, since they live here now, right?
Well, civilization has to kind of work in its own mystical ways, and that's clearly one of the sort of situations that's occurring there. It's brilliant. Phil, as we sort of head through the 2016, here we are, almost halfway through it. Are you gearing up for Independence Day, which, of course, this year on July the 4th, sees the release of Gary Curtis's classic number, Why, a duet with... one of the Nolan sisters. See, there's almost no answer to that, is there really? 4th of July. Or will it be a case of no, Independence Day Resurgence is going to be the summer movie that I'm most looking forward to, especially as you put down Dean's suggestion that somehow it was Tarzan that should have actually been taken as part of the summer movies. No, you said Tarzan isn't released until the autumn. Or the fall.
No, it is. Tarzan is being released in the summer. I didn't take him to test for. I took him to test for the fact that it looks terrible. That was what I took him to test for. Those are my only options for how to celebrate Independence Day.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, you don't want to. Less is more. Kleinisch is churn.
You are right about less being more. I mean, it has always sort of disturbed me that in America, let's celebrate our independence by, you know, eating lots of red meat, drinking to excess, and blowing things up, because that says freedom, gosh darn it. I have always particularly enjoyed making my Independence Days very multicultural. I like eating a cuisine from a different land, seeing a French film. I like celebrating the fact that part of being American is to embrace the best of all cultures until we wall them out, of course. Did you get that subtle jab?
It's, again, you don't want to over-telegraph the punch, particularly when it's been delivered. Think Muhammad Ali, you know, floating like a butterfly, singing
right.
Like a bee.
Wait, he would telegraph a punch, Wasn't that the whole bolo thing? He would telegraph a punch, and then he would hit you with a jab.
Exactly.
While you were paying attention.
Be on the lookout for.
Yeah, so that's what I needed to do. I'm sorry. So it should have been a joke about Bernie Sanders that I made. Last year I had actually a very profound realization of how Independence Day might be playing out for some of the Americans that we should be most thankful for on Independence Day, namely our veterans. We went up to the roof of our building here in historic Los Angeles, and because we figured we would be able to see some good fireworks shows. We were able to see no less than, I think, 15 fireworks shows at different parts of the Southland, and it became very stressful looking from one to the other, to the other, to the other, because you didn't want to miss anything. And before long, I felt like we were under fire. And it made me wonder, is Independence Day hard for some of our combat veterans? Does it trigger any kind of post-traumatic effects? And sure enough, in talking, for example, to my friend Tucker, absolutely, it is a very, very hard day for many of our combat veterans because of the way we celebrate. And that doesn't seem right. It seems like we should be able to come up with some sort of national celebration that certainly can include everyone, but especially those we should be most thankful for.
Not just that, Phil. Think about the furry friends as well. I'm sure that there are many cats and dogs across America who will be somewhat frightened by all those bangs that are going on. They'll be very nervous.
You make a good point. That's true.
Fireworks. That's got to be the way forward. Silent firework displays. Look, there's one
so,
there.
I don't know. I mean, were you a fan of the original Independence Day?
Do you know
the movie?
Brent Spiner was very good in it, and it's always nice to see Will Smith
saving
the world. And of course, the presidential speech, which I'm sure is being used by presidential candidates even at this very moment, to say today will be our Independence Day. After that, I think, well, yes, it was kind of well in the footsteps of, as we say, Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End, if you want to actually work, which was recently televised in a movie, well, a TV series, which kind of was a brave attempt to do it justice. Didn't quite work, but still sort of addressed it quite neatly, I felt.
I loved it. I loved it for exactly the reason that many people dismissed it. You know, I would hear this, that it was, it's nothing but a B-movie. Mm-hmm. And that is why I loved it, was I thought it did have a very nice kind of tongue-in-cheek, loving recreation of sort of the 1950s science fiction aesthetic. It reminded me in spirit of some of the films that were discussed in Culture Shapers. Was that the final name for the series?
Culture Shapers, Culture Makers. It's still working on its third season. It's a bit like Route 66.
Excellent.
When Glenn Corbett took over the sort of sequence, really.
But I felt that there was... I thought it was refreshing. I thought it was a great deal of fun, and taking too much of a sophisticated approach to it as science fiction was doing it a disservice, because that was never the intent. My concern with this resurgence is it feels very heavy-handed, at least, again, in terms of the marketing. And one can say, well, that's just the marketing. That's not necessarily a reflection of the film itself. But, boy, the marketing for the original Independence Day was great fun. It really did capture the spirit of that film. So if that's any indication, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that they didn't recapture what was so special about it, which was that tone.
Perhaps Mars Attacks would be a nice little middle ground to actually revisit once again. After all, it did have Pierce Brosnan, Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito, and Annette Bening in, as well as Glenn Close.
How does that film hold up? I have not seen that since that first came out.
And maybe it'll be a comedic sort of entry into the next series of the Culture Shapers.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Well, it would.
You know, comedic. People love when they get to hear production meetings on the air. You know this. If that weren't true, I wouldn't be in year 10 of Chilpak Hollywood Hour. A season dedicated to comedy in science fiction might be a very interesting season.
I think we will begin to explore that. As I remind people once again, if you wish to actually find out what Siren FM is doing with the United States of America election coverage, you can listen again to the first programme in the series presented by Andrew David and Bruce Rosenblum, former Vice President of the Warner Brothers, Kai Valentine and Maisie Anderson, plus a whole heap of others, if you want to actually have a listen to that. There we are, a bit of cross-promotion done, and rightly so as well. Tomorrow morning, or midnight in Los Angeles, Tessa Snart will be back with us from a little place called Glinton, just outside Peterborough, almost as exciting as Hawaii. Richard Fitzwilliams is back with us again, prepping, of course, for the weekend's celebration of the Queen's 90th birthday. Ian Lennox will be sharing his sporting reflections, as indeed with Christine Webster. But Christine will be talking about her latest novel. And Dr. Serian Sumner and Dr. Natalie Puttarelli will be talking about the annual British Soapbox Science series set up to get more women scientists into the world today. That's tomorrow morning.
Nice.
Phil, I'm off to hopefully have an evening meal with some external examiners now. Oh, the excitement is truly tremendous. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
The most interesting part was that phrase, to have an evening meal with some external examiners.
Yeah,
so euphemistic of a medical procedure.
You don't want to go there,
Phil.
I'll
be dissecting that for hours. Exactly. I hope it goes well for you, my friend. You'll be in my thoughts and my prayers. That's all I'm saying.
Always a splendid scenario. Thanks to Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis, Gary Curtis, Ed Fortune, Sally Geeson, Brian Johnson, and Phil Learness for taking part in the production this evening. That is it. The second midweek drive of June 2016 is wrapped up. Next week, a performance poet, Andy Kerr, should be with us. We might well have a couple of other fine folk around. There will be other midweek drivettes in the studio. Then again, there may not be, but it's the uncertainty that makes life interesting. Coming up as far as Siren's concerned this evening, well, I do believe that the Groundworks team are back at 9 o'clock, and that's going to be as sensational as ever between 9 and 11. And then, of course, tomorrow morning after the Siren What's On Hour, back again with the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, followed at 11 o'clock by Squabble Box Thursday. Phil, it's been a joy. Almost unparalleled. And I miss the times, thanks to the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, when you could actually review the whole show. You're just going to have to listen to the whole thing on podcast and sort of come back to me with notes afterwards from that point of view. But then we're into time machines.
Or we might just have to switch which show that I'm on, because isn't it possible that I could listen to the show and then...
come back after midnight.
Report on it after midnight, my time, obviously, on the morning edition.
Midnight from Los Angeles. Do you know, that could just spark things off in so many ways. I feel
could just record like a letter from upstate New York.
What?
I could just record my ruminations on the previous day's show.
Exactly.
And do it like in the old television series. Here's what you missed on the midweek drive.
Previously on. And speaking of which, Annette Andre and Arthur Weingarten should be back with us next week. Hooray! Phil.
Wonderful.
We'll speak to you then. Take care now.
Bye-bye.